Hey guys, it's Blevins here. I just wanted to put out a little disclaimer that this episode is a little bit more vulgar than we usually put out. Normally, I would go back through and edit it. I just didn't have the time and I wanted to get it out before Overwatch League matches start. So keep that in mind if you've got little kids and you don't want them hearing a couple of swear words here and there. That's really all it is. Nothing too bad. But it is absolutely one of the most fun episodes you're going to listen to. So sit back, relax, have a little fun, and enjoy. Everyone, and welcome to another episode of Around the Payload, brought to you by High Noon Productions. I am your host, The Blevins, and joining me today is just a, I don't even know, ragtag group of Overwatch enthusiasts, community members. I don't know, it's I'm awestruck, especially by you, A. Smith. I'm just going to start with the introductions here. I got nothing more to say. We've got the man, the myth, the legend himself, Uber, Overwatch League caster. Hello, man. Thank you for coming on.
Hi. Thanks for having me, bro. Good to be here.
Thank you for coming on. We also have, and even though she told me not to use this, I'm still using it anyway, the foremost expert on the European Overwatch scene, Nuki. What is up? Thank you for coming on the show.
Disclaimer, I'm not an expert. thanks for having me. All good.
Anytime. We also have, obviously, many of you from the High Noon family know him. We've got A. Smith, the host of Foul Play and the official booker of the High Noon podcast. What's up, man?
Not much. Happy to be here, man.
And we rounding up the lineup, we have the one and only podcasting legend, Blizzard community legend, Chanman V.
Wow, I've never been introduced that way.
I just completely ignored what you wrote, and I had my I had to fanboy. Yeah, please write this.
I think yours is much better. Thanks for having me on. It's gonna be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I if it were legal for me to stream the preview show, I would, but we'd probably have the feds called on us.
We don't do that.
Yeah. Never a good idea.
For the sake of everyone's career and my being a free man in the United States, we're going to keep those off the record. But for those of you who are new to the show, Around the Payload is basically for lack of a better word, it's a copy of Around the Horn from ESPN. We're going to go around. I'm going to be handing out arbitrary points that mean nothing, except they mean everything, but they think they mean nothing. I'm going to be giving out points for everyone. You're going to hear a noise that sounds kind of like this. Yeah, that's me giving out points. It's not your quick play match going off in the background. I had people complaining about that. So without further ado, let's jump right in to round one.
Round one. Capture the objective.
So last week we saw every one of the three full Korean teams lose a match finally, even though sadly NYXL had to lose one. I thought they were going to win everything without ever losing. But A. Smith, we'll start with you. With the three full Korean teams losing this week, does this mean that the Western teams have caught up to the Korean rosters?
Absolutely. I think the Western teams really have done a good job. And the reason why would be they're scrimming with these Korean teams. They're learning more strats and how to deal with these people effectively. And it boosts their entire play. I think the biggest thing, though, is most of these American or NA or European teams have picked up Koreans. Mm-hmm. So when you add Koreans, you kind of catch up to the Koreans pretty quickly. Therefore, by the transitive property, right? Isn't that how that works?
No, you lose points for just saying and referencing the transitive property. it's so bad. It's so rampant too. But go on.
I really do agree with that. That they have caught up. It shows by teams beating them. Other than Seoul, both teams were beat by NA or a combination teams, non-all Korean teams, if you will. I look to see that happening more and more throughout this league as these teams scrim each other. You're going to get more strats. You're going to get better technical things, and you're going to really do well here. Mm-hmm. I expect to see not the three all Korean teams in the top three, like everybody's predicting. It's not going to happen. This league is going to be wild, and it's going to be crazy, and it's going to be a lot of fun, as we've seen this last week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, last week was definitely a proving ground for a lot of teams. But Chanman, I'm curious on your thoughts. Are the NA team, have they caught up, or was this just kind of a fluke this week?
I think they're catching up. I wouldn't say they've caught up yet. Mm-hmm. I think this week was more of a fluke, and you know, it was one of those things where some teams were playing out of their minds. You know, it's some of the Korean teams weren't playing well that day for whatever reason. And then let's just remind you, like, everybody that Seoul, which is the best team, lost to a Korean team. So they, you know, they didn't actually play a Western team until we see literally all three of them then get beat by a Western team. Maybe we'll see that, you know, this week, who knows. But, you know, I think until that happens, you can't really say that they've caught up. But definitely you can see that there are some Western teams that are teams that are made up of Western players that are going to be contending. And it could be much sooner, even like within this season, even maybe even this playoffs, who knows. But they are catching, you know, they're definitely teams we'll talk about, I'm sure, later on with some of these questions that we'll see. But, you know, a little bit to, you know, what A. Smith was saying, you know, they're definitely learning from, or they're getting, you know, a sense for what it's like to play against these players that basically have, you know, this crazy stamina and this high level of play that, that lasts, you know, games and games. Like, last 3 to 4 games, where I think a lot of these teams in the past only had about a game or two in them where they could just play at a super, you know, high level.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely going to be interesting to see, especially in the who makes the playoffs in this last couple of weeks with the playoff race. But Uber, obviously, you're on the front lines of this. You're casting these games. What are your thoughts on where the Western teams stand up against the Korean teams?
Well, I mean, for the first time in, I would say, in the history of like esports globally, there's an even playing field, right? By that I mean the infrastructure and the environment is the same for these teams. So logically, it's reasonable to expect that if there is ever like a gap, that would it would eventually close. But the argument of like top Western teams getting experience from Korean teams is okay, but it's slightly flawed because firstly, sometimes Korean teams just straight up won't scrim you. That is, and even if you're in the Overwatch League, and I know the first couple of weeks, Korean teams were just like, no, I don't think so. Secondly, if the Korean teams choose to scrim you, if they, you know, deign to descend from their thrones, they'll sandbag the shit out of you for the entirety of the scrim block if you can't push them. So the thing is here, like a lot of these teams like Seoul, if you don't push them, there's no incentive for them to show you what they can do. There's absolutely no incentive to do that because, you know, they can just sandbag and play troll and mess around with you. The reason why the gap is closing, if there is one, which has nothing to do with the ratio of Korean players in your teams, because I personally think, by the way, that the West was never behind Korea in DPS. Never the problem, right? It wasn't the caliber of individual, it was the coordination that teams had. I think, like, tanks in North America have always been, like, hard to come by, good tanks especially, and Europe, you could say the same. You know, some of our European tanks, you know, like, definitely have been questionable. So It's the gap is closing, but I don't actually know if it has anything to do with Korean teams even being there. But so everyone has the access to the resources and the capacity to improve. They haven't caught up yet, though. No, I mean London. Okay, to London maybe sure. When I saw London come out of the gates losing maps left, right, and center to like to average Western teams, I kind of thought that would be the case. But guys like Seoul, New York. I would definitely say it spent most of their time preparing for Seoul that week, although Philly played really well. It was really scrappy Overwatch. So Philly got to play their brand of Overwatch and it worked out. So not quite yet have they caught up.
Interesting. Nuki, any thoughts on this, especially when Mitch calls out your European tanks?
It is definitely true that tanks are a tiny bit lacking in either region. But I think that one of the big things that people can do now or can do better now with Mitch saying that there's that even environmental ground is that they actually have, after this like 3 weeks now, that they have enough matches to research on those Korean teams. I mean, it wasn't like except for Seoul, teams drop maps already against the mixed teams and against the more Western oriented teams. And I think with the new support staff structure for each of those teams, with one coach, assistant coaches, and analysts, for example, it's a very strong argument for them to prepare better against those Korean teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's definitely something to be said about the level playing field, if nothing else. And it'll definitely be trying to see moving forward. But let's move on and talk a little bit about the Dallas Fuel and really the big news from this week. Again, dominated by Dallas Fuel, although this week maybe in a better light than the week with XQC, but all signs pointing to AKM joining the Dallas Fuel. So, Chanman, I want to get your thoughts. How is Dallas going to use him? They have a full roster right now. What's the game plan for AKM and Dallas Fuel?
Well, first off, I'm just super happy that AKM is finally, you know, at least there's talks right now. I know it's not finalized or anything, mm-hmm. but you know, it's getting really close for him to finally be on a team, because obviously he's been a huge topic ever since mm-hmm. all the players were signed for, you know, just season one, right? Mm-hmm. So AKM, I mean, what is he going to do for Feel? I mean, it's obvious what he's going to do for Feel. I mean, this guy's a hit scan god. I mean, he's been that way from the history of Overwatch. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been on some of our great teams that we've had historically, and really nothing's changed. If you watch AKM play right now, he's still a phenomenal hit scan player. I think the Dallas Fuel need a hit scan player right now. They've been trying to fill, you know, like certain needs, like Widow, for instance, you know, with Effect kind of moving over. And to be honest, it just takes away from the effectiveness of Effect when you have to put him, you know, in certain situations where, you know, he might not be, like, he can't be two places at once. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So putting him on Widow is a necessity for them right now, but it's not optimal for the team. So getting him, I think getting AKM in the rotation, getting Taimu, you know, back up to shape, mm-hmm. I think will do wonders for Dallas Fuel.
Yeah, for sure. And you did, in fact, get a couple points for the effectiveness pun. I liked it. Uber, yes. what are you, I love the reaction to that, Uber, but what are your thoughts on AKM and the Dallas Fuel?
First of all, like, obviously he hasn't signed anything. And I'm pretty sure the only reason why Hasbro announced it is because Jacob Wolf contacted him and said, I'm going to break this story. And so normally what you do then is you let the journalist break the story because you done goofed and he found out somewhere, right? But Hasbro's like, nah, fam, this is my favorites and retweets. He goes out Not the best idea, by the way, because journalists like Jacob who break news regularly, yep. you know, can, you kind of want him to be on your side or at least work with him a little bit. But to the point itself, okay, seriously, like, if we're in a world where Taimu was actually playing well, there's actually not a place for AKM in this roster. Mm-hmm. So, like, this is obviously out of necessity, right, that he's being brought mm-hmm. in. I mean, he can't play Genji, and Effect is not going to play Genji. Sorry, it's not actually mm-hmm. going to happen. And guess what? Seagull's also not going to play Genji, not at least for the first couple stages. Especially not with the way the meta is now, and you're far more rewarded for playing Junkrat all series. Mm-hmm. So AKM's a well and good to come into this team. He will obviously sort of fill that hitscan role. Unproven, by the way, on Widowmaker at that top level. Mm-hmm. Didn't play much of it in his time with Rogue. It wasn't a comp they played at all. He played 76, and some 76.
Well, a little in my career, didn't
he? In a meta where, like, D.Va was so dominant that 76 is like Taimu in Apex, who were very easily shut down and made kind of, you know, kind of nullified a little bit. Mm-hmm. But the World Cup was really good from AKM. That was mm-hmm. I think, if not for a good World Cup, AKM could have been in more trouble because the meta didn't favor 76 or, like, hitscan-focused players at the time. His Pharah is really good. Now, guess who's mm-hmm. also not playing Pharah? Seagull. Hasn't been playing mm-hmm. Pharah because he hasn't had time to practice it because he's been playing Junkrat and Hanzo in their Junkertown comp. So he can actually fit that role. There are spots that he can fit into that Timo didn't fill, but mm-hmm. it's like you don't necessarily have a Widowmaker for AKM, but you do have a Pharah. So it doesn't solve any glaring problem. It just fills a gap that Timo ostensibly seems to be leaving right now because he just straight up doesn't want to play or whatever it is. I'm more interested to see what the addition of a new main tank to this team will do. Mm-hmm. Because unpopular opinion, I don't know how, like, I don't know what is going to happen with XQC after his suspension, because he's not been practicing with the team. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not scrimming with them until it's done, because why would you scrim with him? And Coco, we know he's that quite aggressive player. He also is quite a stubborn player. He's very stubborn. So, you know, if they can unlock themselves by having a main tank that's adept at being aggressive, then it might be even more an important story than AKM coming on.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Definitely a lot of interesting stuff with the Dallas Fuel. But Nuki, I'm interested to get your thoughts on what you think the Dallas Fuel will do with AKM. If this is, assuming that this is true, you know, what is AKM have in store for the Dallas Fuel?
A pretty interesting storyline that I could think about is moving Timo a tiny bit, because we saw him playing the Roadhog. We saw him playing like more DPS, DPS oriented off tank roles.
Mm-hmm.
And with Mickey on the as a main D.Va player, they could definitely use someone that plays the more aggressive off tanks a tiny bit more frequently. I think putting AKM on a hitscan role and then maybe playing on certain maps with Teemo on Roadhog or with Teemo on Zarya could actually benefit them in the long run, and it gives a tiny bit of more flexibility to them, especially if Teemo really feels like he tweeted the other day that he's not a really good hitscan player at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, but like, it doesn't matter how good you are at the game, not everyone is going to be able to deal with the rigors of being in the Overwatch League.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, that stuff is going to be tough on you mentally. And Dallas Fuel has the biggest and most rabid fan base, by the way. They outsold every other team in terms of jersey sales by an extremely large margin. The big fan base, and they're very
the inside extra points.
It's totally Jack in the Box related.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely because that beautiful.
Totally Jack in the Box.
Yeah,
that... Actually, Tasmo came into the bar we were at the other night. Tasmo, the GM from Dallas, bought us all Jack in the Box. Didn't even tweet it out. Didn't even tweet it out to get like sponsorship points. By the way, no brownie points. It was actually okay.
Just,
okay.
but speaking of Dallas Fuel fans and specifically a Dallas Fuel fanboy, I'm interested, A. Smith. I know you've been mulling about this one for a while. What are your thoughts on AKM in Dallas?
Yeah, I have. Being a representative from the South, one of the few Southern teams that we got here is Dallas. And so I grew up a Cowboys fan, grew up a Mavericks fan, and the Fuel were obviously the obvious choice for me. But I've spent a lot of time looking at this and looking at the stats, and obviously AKM is known for his soldier, and a lot of people say, well, what can he add? Obviously, Effect is a great hitscan player. Why would you play two hitscan players? I mean, obviously, Dallas has a history of running two hitscan players with Teemo. However, as you look further into AKM's hero pool, you notice his Pharah is one of the best in the world, and that's a big hole for them. He also plays a great McCree and a good Sombra. But you know what's most surprising is his second most played hero on the last two teams that he's been on have been D.Va. He has filled in when Nico was playing Genji. He was the D.Va, and he had a very good D.Va. He was a very serviceable D.Va. That might open up a whole different setup for them. Just picture this here. You have AKM who can flex on to D.Va. You've got Effect, who obviously runs your hitscan, and then you have Teagle, who can run a very serviceable projectile player, and then you can flip them around whenever you want. AKM and Seagull plays has known to play a really good Zarya as his Effect. I really think you could use that in a whole different light. Maybe Mickey doesn't play as much, or Mickey comes in. You have so many different options with this. I think AKM is going to be an integral part, and I don't think you're going to see as much Teemo because right now he just doesn't seem in with this.
I think if you make Dylan, if you make AKM play D.Va, he's going to jump off the field.
if the company's like
rogue, they argued all the time, by the way, over who would play D.Va. Neither of them ever wanted to do it, even if they knew it was a better composition. And I guess like also with Dallas now having to go back to basics. You're right, though. You're right in that, like, you've got Seagull, you know, that can play Zarya, and they do have those deeper options. But I think at least initially, we're going to see them just try and play something, you know, maybe play two looks, try and put Dire back in the composition, and maybe just go with that. Options are in the future, yeah, but that's not why you're going to bring AKM in, I don't think, right now.
Sure, but I just think that having those different options is the biggest thing. I mean, you need to have flexibility. The problem, one of the bigger problems is they haven't been switching their comps. They've been literally running the same comp, and it's been a serious issue.
Well, I mean, for them, I think they've been running the same comp because they've been trying to simplify things. You know, I think they came into this league just with this whole concept of being to switch around things and doing really cool strats, and what's ended up happening is like some of the players have been struggling, and they've gotten to a point where they just don't really have this fundamental base to build off of in terms of strategy. So I think that's kind of what you're seeing now. You know, it's a complete opposite of what they started the season with and what they intended to go. And hopefully they'll get back to it because the pieces are still very versatile. But right now, I think they're just trying to keep things pretty simple and, you know, see if they can just at least, you know, just better their play, better their results.
Yeah.
It's like they've got so many issues that, like, Taikai didn't even have a bench the other day. He had no one really to sub in because Timo wasn't feeling up to playing. He said, I don't think that I should be playing. I think Seagull should be playing on Junkrat. So when you've got all these problems and you're trying to fix these problems during the season, and try to change like your team comp and approach, like you've got to go back to basics because there's too many things to handle. And even though they've got support staff there, it would be too much then to just try and reinvent the wheel while you're having problems with getting people behind their freaking PCs.
True. The last thing I'll put out here is I think it's what I call the Blevstradamus pick of everyone is assuming here, you know, maybe there's going to be some trades. Maybe they trade Taimu. Maybe they move Taimu around, whatever. Mm-hmm. I think the main assumption everyone is making that Effect stays on Dallas. I'm putting it out here. Trade Effect to Seoul for Miro. Think about it. You heard it here first, folks. And also, you probably heard it here last. But let's move on. Speaking of trades, the trade and signing window is actually live right now, and we're going to start with one specific team because they're on everyone's mind, and they're the first team everyone talks about with the signing and acquisition window. It's the Florida Mayhem. So, Uber, we'll start with you. What should Florida do in this signing window? Should they trade people? Should they trade for people? Should they bring extra people on? Like, what's the strategy here going into that window for Florida Mayhem?
Yeah, okay. So first thing, I think when people look at Florida and go, they need to pick up more people, and I ask them why, they go, because they're fucking losing. Excuse me.
You got to lose a point for the F-bomb. I'm
going... What, is this that kind of show? Is this what I'm walking?
Every time he has to
edit. The show is laden with traps.
So, if they tell me that they need to get more players because they're losing, I want to backhand them, right? There needs to be a good reason. Like, there's a problem with any of these six players, right? If I get they're tired, right? But ideally, a lot of these teams are going to be fielding like that same six players. Like you do have to play twice a week, and that's not easy, okay? But a lot of the hard work happens behind the scenes a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So I want to see there are a couple of pickups in the DPS department. I think find another flex tank player, give yourself a bit more of that. I think Manitin's the best player on the team right now. His mentality is also the best. But you could bring in someone like someone that could sort of fill in these roles and also just be an understudy for him, like Zappas, for example, who a good pick. He'd sort of obviously join up with Zuppert. You need a Zen player on this team. Zuppert does not like to play Zen. He doesn't like it at all. I would like to see them try and, you know, I don't think they'll ever get you know, guys like Shaz from the Gladiators, but I mean, to try and find more prodigal sort of Zen players, because Zuppert's incredible on Ana, right? But he dislikes playing Zen because he's a passive player. He doesn't like to, you know, take risks. He doesn't make plays in that regard. I think Finzi would also be actually quite a good pickup for this particular team. I think that, like, Logics, we've seen him that he can play the Tracer and the McCree. And, you know, we've seen him on the 76. I think Finzi is a better hit scan player. It's funny because he only busted out the McCree, like, at the end of the Contenders sort of play for 1-2-3, but it was really good. You also pick up Snillo as well. I think if you could fill out your DPS pool more, I think that... You would use a player like Zappas as well. We could put him on a main tank role. I don't think that... Swoosh's stats do not make me feel great about him. I want to see him playing the Genji. I want to see him playing the Genji because Tvik hasn't been a good Genji and hasn't been able to spend enough time on Genji to make an impact in the game. So I want to see a swap there. I want to see Swoosh go back to playing DPS and then bring in like another tank for him. And even one of the 1-2-3 guys would be good. Someone like Hafenkel is quite a good player, and he can fill in like that flex tank position as much as Zappas could. But yeah, tons of options. If I'm just thinking European, to try and simplify my answer.
for sure. I mean, we could talk forever just on this one team, and we've got more to talk about later. But Nuki, any thoughts on what could the Florida Mayhem do here in the signing period, trading period, what have you? Anything that jumps to your mind for the Florida Mayhem?
I'm mostly agreeing with stuff that Mitch just said. I think a second tank. Stop it! Just because you can talk so much. I think a tank, another main tank than Swoosh is definitely something that you want to have on. Not only for having the diversity of the tanks, but also to play around a tiny bit with the roster more. They have flexible players on there. And they need to nail down their DPS roles a tiny bit more. It's really nice that Vic is super flexible and that he's like one of the players that people talk very good about. But I think in OWL you have the possibility to have a bigger core and specialized players a tiny bit more, mm-hmm. depending on map, depending on strat, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. having someone in additionally to Twig and to Logix, one or two players even that can flexibly play certain specific picks, even if it's just a Genji player, or mm-hmm. as Mitch said, for example, Hafikul would be a nice pickup because he's very flexible on DPS and on off tank. He can fill both roles. Plus Swoosh having the possibility of playing both roles and then just picking up a solo main tank player mm-hmm. would be really benefiting for them. I think the approach of having just the six players made them way too unflexible to compete with the other people that have the possibility to specialize in certain departments, especially DPS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was definitely in the same boat as you, Uber, when people were telling me, oh, they have six players, they're bad. It's like, it's not why. But, I mean, they haven't really backed me up there. But, A-Smith, I want to get your thoughts on what the Florida Mayhem can do here in this trade season.
Look, I've got four specific names for you. I'm going to break this down. A lot of kind of points where they've covered, but a tank is very important. And the tank that I would pick up for them would be Malzasa. He's a very good European tank. One of the best. Tonic would be another person that I would really consider picking up for them within those two tank roles. I think that would free up Swoosh to go to Genji and play mm-hmm. some more which would be great. Flex support, I really like Gray from Portugal. He's a really good fit for that team. I would venture to say that he could play that Zenyatta. He also has a really, really good Sombra. Mm-hmm. He's a very good player. Again, I think he would really fit with that team and really boost them. Obviously, Zappas is a name that everybody's thrown around. Zappas would be perfect for them. He fits a lot of roles, and he's also a flexible player, works well. And the last one, the most controversial player I'm going to pick, I really, really think that they should trade for Tymon. I think if people might not agree with that, and okay, Tymon doesn't want to play, and sure, but you get Tymon, maybe change the scenery, just a different team. He might start mm-hmm. to feel a little better. Obviously, going to a team that's not quite the same caliber right now might not be good, but I really think that would be a spot where Tymon could shine. I think that would be a team where, I mean, sure, you have Logix, and Logix is a great player, but I really think Tymon, I mean, he could almost even fill in the Pine role in a way where you mm-hmm. kind of come in on a map and all of a sudden, you know, he pops off on McCree and you're like, oh my gosh, he's amazing. You know, Tymon really has a lot of opportunities, and I think that would free up a lot of different areas for Florida. If they sign those four players, I could see them definitely moving up. And lastly, they need coaches. They need more coaches.
Yeah.
They need a bigger coaching staff. Their coaching staff is one person right now from what mm-hmm. we know, and that's not quite enough. I feel like the org really isn't supporting the team as much as they should.
So. Yeah. I think Graham Mazasa, 100%, great point there. I think you're right, no more coaching staff. They also need someone so Tvik doesn't have to drive the team bus for an hour. The arena. And, you know, they have no support.
Is that real life?
Every time they ask for... No, this is actually real life. These guys live like an hour away. And every time that... Let's just say, like...
Wow.
Tighter than a fish's butthole when it comes to money.
Oh, we got it.
Tadeek is the most versatile player in the league. Yeah, officially.
He's doing it all, and he's flipping burgers too. But Chan Man, I know.
Carrying his team to work.
Chan Man, I know you are in the Florida area, so this has got to hit home to you. What are your thoughts? What are you thinking about?
It just pains my soul every time I have to talk about the man. I mean, all of you guys have covered like a lot of what I would probably say. I mean, player-wise, Zap is Gray. I mean, actually, A-Smith, you named a bunch of them that was like Malzasa and Gray were two guys I was going to try to talk about. But for me right now, you know, I think all those guys, you know, together and just having the same kind of thing with Dallas, like it's super versatility. That's great. You know, that's great on paper and everything. But, you know, I just feel like when I watch the Mayhem games, most of the times it's just straight up the other team just has better players than them. you know, and, yeah. and sometimes it can be have to do with the meta and just like, you know, the personnel is only six players, so it's not optimal, you know, from that standpoint. But I just feel like they just need to get people who are just super good at that one position. Forget mm-hmm. forget flexibility. You've got plenty of guys that are flexibility. You don't need that. Like, try to grab a couple specialists. I mean, maybe even Fact, you know, like Fact Fiction, mm-hmm. nobody's talked about him either. Obviously, he's a very, you know, specialized in like a Reinhardt and that sort of thing, but he can, you know, he can play some Winston too. But the thing is that I feel like they're in need of something like that. It's like this kind of stability where, you know, okay, if I put in this guy, he's going to go off on whatever he's doing, you know, whether it's like a tank role or it's a DPS or whatever. Right now, I don't see that, you know, and it takes like all of them playing super well to even just have a good game, you know, like in a series. So right now, I think there's a bunch of holes. And like you guys said, the biggest thing is staffing. Like there's no excuse for that at this point. Like, you have to get a full staff to support these players. And I mean, it just speaks to you as an organization right now. You know, this isn't just like, oh, first season, you know, let's, you know, save money. No, dude, we're like halfway through, you know, we're halfway through stage one and we're past the halfway point. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is, you know, the teams are investing money and they're showing that, you know, they're taking this league seriously right off the bat. So Florida needs to catch up from an operation standpoint, like miles and miles.
Yeah.
So hopefully they'll do that.
Yeah, for sure. And the one thing I'll put in here is that Florida Mayhem, if you're looking for a driver / burger cook, I'm right here. No. will sell popcorn in the stands for a spot the on the bench.
The jerseys are going to fit the whole character, so that red and yellow, make him some burgers, right?
That's true.
It's a McDonald's. Looks like McDonald's, right?
I know. It's
I hear your boy DeFran is good at burgers.
A Smith. I was just going to congratulate everyone for avoiding the bomb of mentioning DeFran, and then you went ahead and mentioned DeFran. Congratulations!
I
could have
sworn he was going to be on the team. I said he could.
Just bringing him up at all is good for some negative points. But let's move on. We'll talk a little bit less about this one. We'll keep this one at a high level. The signing period's open. There's a lot of players that aren't in Overwatch League yet. There's teams that have some spaces to be filled and whatnot. They're lacking a little bit. Nuki, I want to get your thoughts. Is there anything that jumps out from other teams maybe making trades or picking up or maybe players that aren't in Overwatch League that you think could make a splash?
One thing that immediately comes to mind is Shanghai Dragons there, because you saw all the drama around the team pickups, all the politics and policy things and stuff like that. And I think they could actually benefit from leaving that aside a tiny bit and actually looking at some players from Miraculous Youngsters, because I think it would greatly benefit their team to just pick up some very high mechanical players. From an already proven team, maybe even look at some that played. What was it? OPC? I think it was OPC. Mm-hmm. And just get some more synergy in that team, and not only to turn down the drama and to actually starting to be effective in the league.
Yeah, definitely a good point there. A Smith, I'm curious. What do you? I know you had a whole essay here. What is some of that essay?
Okay, I had four teams that I think, but I'll stick with two teams. I like San Francisco to the Shock to pick up some players and maybe move some players around. I really think they need help in the support role. They only have two main supports with Dak and Sleepy. I think a player like Adam or Wolf would be really good on that team. You're sticking with the NA feels, but still going with a good support to kind of mix in there. Obviously, if you're still in the Mercy meta, Adam is the obvious choice there. Adam's notably known as one of the best Mercies in the world. It's kind of shocking that he never even made it to OWL in the first place. And I like Nomi, but I don't think he's the best tank out there for them. I think there are better ones out there. I really like Christopher to be picked up on that team. I think he would be a good pickup, and you give them some flexibility with the tanks and you're going to, you know, prevent some burnout there. The other team I would say would be Houston, and I know people love to hate on Clockwork, but I do think another Tracer player would be good for that team. I think a player like Davin from Gigante would be a great pickup for them, as well as, I'm sorry about this, Nuki, but Craggy would be a really good pickup. He plays a great Tracer player. I know he's on your team now, but he would be great to go into like the Houston team.
I would be happier if he gets an old spot. Don't get me
good.
Wrong.
Good.
Just, I'm not like that.
Just after he wins Contenders, right? No. Got to get that trophy first. But Chan Man, anyone jumping out for you with the training period?
I mean, the biggest one for me, I think, would be Shock too. I think Shock have a lot of holes, especially like A-Smith was saying, in the support area. It's going to be interesting once Sinatra and Super get on the team, you know, because that's going to change a lot of the dynamic. But definitely, we've seen Sleepy struggle like on numerous occasions. You know, the times that the Shock actually do well, Sleepy actually plays decently. So I think that, you know, he's been having some problems there. It's not solely his issue, but they definitely have some kind of, you know, chemistry issue or something there with that. Dak at times too, I don't think has been in the best. So yeah, I think Adam would actually be good. I think Adam actually plays, he's obviously a great Mercy, but I think he can actually play Lucio in different support heroes quite well too. So, I mean, I know he's still out there. You know, in terms of the tanks, I don't know. That's a tough one, actually. I think that you could make an argument that, you know, that Nomi's not playing well there, but definitely having an other option there. I mean, there's a road. I mean, they have issues, I even feel like, with off tank, you know, on this team. Mm-hmm. So I think there's even some possible Roadhogs out there. I think that could be actually be pretty good for them too. I mean, we've got specialists still out there. I mean, Harblu's still out there, you know, and so there's, I think they could stand to improve. I think they actually have good pieces in play. So if they could just replace one or two pieces, we could actually see the Shock, you know, kind of rise, you know, maybe into that mid, upper mid, you know, level in terms of where their ranking is right now. But yeah, I mean, and like Nuki said, I mean, I think Shanghai Dragons have a lot to really look at right now. And I think everybody knows that. So that's kind of an obvious one.
Yeah. But Uber, last word here. What's the big splash that's coming for a non-Florida team?
Yeah, I'll try and keep it short. I want to see Xu Fan Jun brought into the Shanghai Dragons roster. Sure. I think a couple players on that, even Jiki Ren as well, as a good as a flex tank player. I think like Shanghai's tanks and supports are not good. I'll leave it there. The Gladiators could use an extra flex tank or someone who can sort of go across flex and DPS. If they don't have Bishu on any given day, they don't have a D.Va player, and they actually really struggled when Bishu was sick during the pre-season. And they played, I'm going to say it was Boston or something like that, and they had a lot of problem there playing triple DPS because they couldn't play anything else, and it didn't work because their divers got decimated. San Francisco, it'll be interesting once Super and Sinatra come into the team as well. I think Nomi is going to have to step up. I don't think IDDQD is going to play much at all, full stop. I just think that's going to... We're just not going to see much from him. I have to question Sol's DPS a little bit. I need to see Bunny and Wakid are not going to be top DPS players in this league at this state, and probably we need to keep an eye on them. I think that hurt them. Flatter is very much doing a lot of stuff on his own. The Valiant, I don't think either Silk Thread or Agilities is the answer for the Los Angeles Valiant if they need a really, really strong secondary DPS player. Yeah, I think that when it comes, like, Silk Thread has some good moments on Genji, but this team, if they really want to be consistently a top performing team, they might consider another player in that role. I think Soon is obviously very good and not the issue there. That's about, I mean, there's a few things. I think, like, teams like Philadelphia have players they just don't need straight up. Like, I'm glad that Hopper's fine. I mean, he played okay a couple of moments for him that I didn't love against the Shanghai Dragons, but like, it's so easy that to be down on a D.Va when like Poco's out there just like leading the 44th Battalion Brigade with like mortar strikes like everywhere over the battlefield.
Play the games every time.
But people like Mistakes and Snillo are on their respective rosters. Like, what, you think you got Mistakes is going to get put in over Striker anytime soon? Do you think that, you know, Snillo is going to get put in over Carpe anytime soon? Like, these guys are out there. I don't think we'll see many trades, but there's a lot of free agents still out there. But you keep an eye on that Valiant one, because we'll have to see. I think when we go, by the way, who cares about Mercy players? Because the meta's going to change. We're going to see more Lucio. We're going to see a lot of tanks. We're going to see a lot of tanks. I'm talking quad tank.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's why I think a lot of like Roadhog players are going to be getting jobs here soon. But Yeah. So do you guys actually think there will be trades? Because I'm wondering if this first season people are going to admit that they've been wrong, right? I mean, that's like a big thing, ego first. And then secondly, you know, it's like you can't just trade bad. Nobody wants bad play or people that perform badly, right? So, I mean, you'd have to trade somebody good in return to hopefully get somebody, you know, good that has a more potential than what they're doing right now.
You can trade for cash. Nate said that you can basically trade for straight cash. You can like buy them.
You also trade for empty spots as well.
Yeah.
So all I'll say is that we've brought up the fact that Dallas needs an aggressive tank and that Seoul could use an upgrade in the Tracer spot. I'll just leave it at that. Just think about it. Think about
it. Stop
it. That's going to bring us to the end. That's it's going to happen. I'm telling you. God, if it happens, I'm going to – everyone in the world owes me $5. I'm just saying, everyone that watches an Overwatch League match, if it happens, you owe me $5. I'm just saying. But that's going to bring us to the end of round one. We definitely have a very close one here. Quick recap of the scores. We've got Nuki with 21 points, Asmith with 22, Chanman with 24, and Mitch with the fish's butthole comment just bought you so many points with 26. But we are going to move right into round two.
Round two, capture the objective.
So this is an interesting topic here. We've got so each team obviously has to play two games a week. And theoretically, they're going to want to prepare for both of these teams. So I'm curious, we've definitely seen very linear teams still be able to do well. So I'm wondering, and I'll start with you, Asmith, is there not enough time for these teams to prep for both matches in a week?
I'm going to have to say yes, there isn't. You hear a lot that the casters have been saying that they focused all of their time on this game and probably not this game. Therefore, that's why they don't look as prepared or whatever. And, you know, and that was the excuse that New York had, you know. And I think it really might be a valid excuse. And you look at it and it just seems like you're cramming a lot of time and then you have games that are like a day or two apart and it's just really, really tough. I would like to see them space out the games, maybe do like first of the week and then end of the week maybe instead of doing all in one block, you know, giving your teams a little more time. I know that having you'd have like a week off or whatever, you know, they have with it all being in one time, they get like a full day of a break or whatever, but I really would like to see that. And then you have an occurrence like Dallas had where they closed one night and then they, within like 12 hours or something, they had to play the next day. And that's just rough. That's tough on a team, especially they can't go back and review their VODs and get proper amounts of sleep before the next game and then do all that. It's just really tough. I hate to see stuff like that. And I don't care if it's Dallas or whoever it is. I don't think teams should be put in that position. I think you should give them a little more time to prepare. Therefore, we would see better games. I think we would see teams more prepared and the games and the level would be even higher than it is now.
Yeah. Chanman, what are your thoughts on this? Is there too much to prepare for in a given week of Overwatch League?
Yeah, I mean, I think that when you have a team that actually has to prepare twice as many maps than the other team, then, you know, we can definitely run into an issue. Not even to mention just two different teams, right? So I think we've run into that, like, several times. I don't know why that happens, to be honest. Like, it should be possible to create a schedule that does lay out teams, you know, playing, you know, different teams on different sides of the week, you know, and have that actually work out. So it's, you know, it's definitely been something I think they probably learned this year. And, you know, the back-to-backs, like you just said, 12-hour difference between that should just not happen. You know, we don't have like that many. We don't have 31 teams and we've got these crazy basketball deals where we literally have to do four games back-to-back. You know, we don't have anything like that in Overwatch right now. So Overwatch leagues, so that shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
So right now, yes, we are seeing issues. And we, you know, I think as people who are, you know, pundits and watching these analysts, we have to take that into account. You know, some of these losses is because of that reason. So, you know, we might take it as excuses, but they're actually valid excuses.
Yeah.
And hopefully when it comes down to, like, you know, the playoffs and some of these, like, very, you know, just very hyped games and series, we get to a point where they can prepare. They have plenty of time to prepare. Kind of like what we saw with Apex, right? Like, that was the beauty of Apex is because we saw teams that had plenty of time to scout each other and then prepare for each other. And then it was just who could execute the best.
Yeah, for sure. Uber, I know you are doing a lot of prep for these matches. Is it too much in a given week for these teams?
So the schedule could be better. It's also like the map pool situation will need to be looked at more. So like in theory, it works. Like having the map pools the way they are. But then like, for example, like Dallas turn around and have to play like Boston the morning after playing San Francisco. Boston only have to practice 4 or 5 maps of the week. Dallas had to practice 7 or whatever. That kind of sucks. But while I'm at it, Blizzard, I'm going to be at the arena till 11 p.m. on Friday night and then be back there. Let's not just talk about the players. What about us? I mean, in all seriousness, I think it is too short. There is a way to get, like, you can get the schedule better. The map pool argument is a different one, and it's actually more complicated than people sort of see on face value. It actually is to benefit the teams, obviously, with all the maps that there are. But we, as casters, also said there's got to be a way that this can be avoided. And in most cases, it can. Sometimes it can't be. Mm-hmm. Because matches are also often played at a specific time to suit their time zone.
Yeah.
So East Coast matches, you know, and also London playing earlier on in the day, things like that. So, like, you've got a few constraints you have to juggle, and it's not always going to be perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For sure. There's definitely a lot of moving parts, but Nuki, final thoughts on this one. Is it too much? Would it be too much for your team to, so to say, to prepare for these two matches in such a short period of time?
I think so too. Yeah. I mean, the other three guys basically said everything that is there to be said. So there's not much
going,
more.
The thrills are going last, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the around the payload is definitely a brutal show in terms of format with that. So I apologize for that one, but let's move right along. Stage one playoffs are very, very quickly approaching here. It's going to be the top three teams, regardless of division, are going to be in the stage one playoffs, 2 place 3, and then the winner of that plays rank one. Right now, it's almost with a little bit of a caveat, anyone's game to be able to either get into the stage one playoffs or get booted out of the stage one playoffs. I don't believe that mathematically there are any locks here. Now there's some very, very likely ones. So, Chan Man, I'll start with you. Do you have any dark horse picks for a stage one playoff berth? Is there a team that no one's expecting or that people wouldn't have expected at the beginning of the season to make the stage one playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, right now, like you said, it's anybody's game. I mean, we have 3 teams at 5-1, 3 teams at 4-2. So it's, you know, nobody has a lock there. Everybody's going to have to win their place in this playoff. And for me right now, I don't even know if there's that much of a dark horse given how they've looked the last 2 weeks. But I'm high on the Houston Outlaws. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that they are a top three team right now. And, you know, hopefully they'll get a chance to prove it this week. But I just like the way they're playing. I mean, they seem to be in sync. They seem to fix whatever was happening, you know, week one. And right now, they are playing very disciplined and just, quite honestly, just executing plans that, you know, you can kind of see what their game plan is going to each and every one of these games. And they are executing really, really well right now. You know, I think a lot of teams will watch a lot of that, you know, the VODs and the films and try to prep a little bit better for these type of strats they're throwing out there. Mm-hmm. So they'll prepare for them. But right now, Houston Outlaws are rolling. And, I mean, Lynx are just on fire. And Jake's obviously one of the best Junkrats right now. And you got Mooma and all. I mean, you have basically everybody on that team playing well. And you know, they're just on the same page. You know, like whenever you have 6 guys that are like, you know, on board with, you know, whatever, you know, Tyrong's like selling them. I mean, Tyrong's just an awesome coach that I'm sure play for. But right now they're all drinking that Kool-Aid and they're on the same page. And it shows, you know, that's what these teams in Overwatch League will have to be. You're not going to be able to carry with these like individuals anymore. You're going to have to be collectively, you know, as a team, just working together and, you know, performing all at a high level. So I see that right now in Houston. I don't even see that in some of the top teams. Actually, I see like inconsistencies as to like how some of the players are playing even on Seoul. And I mean, New York, honestly, up until like this last week, you know, I felt like was in the same boat. But then, you know, that first game against Philly just looked ugly for them. But then they stepped it up in Seoul. So, you know, I think New York has those qualities too. And then London is just like, man, I don't know which London team I'll see from time to time. So.
Yeah. But Nuki, I'm curious to get your thoughts on this one. Is there any team that maybe that people aren't too high on right now that you think may be able to make a run here at the Stage 1 playoffs?
I don't think any of those that people aren't too high on about. My heart really wants Philly to make it because it's it's my European babies. But...
Same reason. Yeah.
My heart really hopes that Philly can step it up a notch and just slip into those top threes, even if it means that maybe London needs to drop out of it. Another thing that I really would like to see would be Los Angeles Valiant. I think they played pretty consistently throughout all their runs, and even against the Koreans and stuff. There's definitely potential there to at least compete with the Koreans. So we have to see, I guess.
Yeah, I think with the exception of Shanghai and Florida, that everyone's got a chance. Although I think maybe if Florida, no, I don't even, I think Florida might be mathematically out. Shanghai probably mathematically out. But Uber, any thoughts here? Is there a team that people are sleeping on right now that could make the playoffs?
My dark horse for the playoffs is the London Spitfire.
Yes.
Nice. I'm not kidding you, Rose. So they lack, the old economy's not been good. Bedosin especially has been getting crunched in a lot of these games. Rascal hasn't stepped up to his potential as the kind of player that should mirror Pine on a team that ostensibly is just as strong. Issues with their coaching staff, they're too aggressive, or at least like aggressive to the point of not being able to sort of restabilize in some of these fights. They can get staggered out. Their McCree comps get dived on really easily. You can see that between the Valiant and the Spitfire. Like, they run Rascal McCree, just get smashed every single fight. So they're not playing well around him. Junkrat play has not been stellar. Hureg coming in and playing a bit of McCree was good, but, you know, maybe we could see some more flexibility from him. Super unconvincing. And, yeah, I don't care if they're 5-1. Like, I think that they're going to start to run the gauntlet. They've got a lot of nasty teams to get through. So they're my dark horse.
Interesting pick for a dark horse. I don't think many people would consider it one, but you did make a very good point about it.
Who's the third right now then, Uber? Or Mitch, who's the third one right now then, if they're the dark horse?
Do you mean the third one in terms of...
top three teams right now then?
Depending on this week, either the Valiant or Houston.
Yeah.
Interesting. A. Smith, any final thoughts on a dark horse pick?
Yeah, I really like the Fusion. I really think they have a shot, and purely just looking at their schedule, who they have left. You look at teams like Seoul, London, and Houston, and all three of those teams play any combination of each other. They have each of them play each other. Therefore, they're going to probably eliminate one another in some way. One of them will make it. But the other two, I don't think will. You've got the Philadelphia Fusion, and they've got Valiant, Fuel, Uprising, and Mayhem. Right now, the way Fuel's playing, it's probably a win for Philly. Mayhem should be a win for Philly. And then you've got Uprising and Valiant, and both of those are going to be close games. If they win one of those, they're going to end up with three losses, and I think you can make it in with three losses. I think they might have a tiebreaker when it comes to maps or however they're going to do that, but I really think that Fusion have a good opportunity given the schedule that they have upcoming compared to teams like Seoul and London and Houston, where they have a lot more brutal schedules ahead of them.
Yeah, for sure.
And one more thing, I think New York has a lock due to their schedule. New York has a pretty easy schedule coming up.
They have a soft lock.
Yeah, they have a soft lock. I think they're, unless they pull off some crazy, somebody get crazy upset it again. I don't think that they're going to, I think they're pretty much having it locked up.
Yeah. Part of me wants to root for Philly to make it, but part of me knows that they are the High Noon Podcast host team slayer. So I just can't, My heart says no, but my brain and part of my heart says yes, because Fraggy has the High Noon bump. But let's move on. Last question around to, so we saw the former Miraculous Youngster player Late Young talk about getting offers and talks from Overwatch League teams, but not even wanting to field them or do anything about them because of him being a former booster in Korea, in China. So I'm just kind of, well, we saw this with Sato. We've seen this with some other players as well. So Uber, I want to get your thoughts. So should these players with these, you know, less than perfect pass be given a second shot to play in the Overwatch League?
The Shanghai Dragons coach literally was boosted by two of the current active players on the roster. I mean, I'm sorry, but like if there's any chance of Dufresne getting to play in the damn league, yeah, give the guy another chance, for God's sake. Like, he's boosting people. It doesn't matter. Like, what I'm interested in is the best games from the best players, right? Mm-hmm. And if they can behave themselves on social media, that's a definite plus. Something I can sure learn to do myself. So yes, give me the good players. Give me a good Chinese player, for the love of God. It's like waiting for the rain and stuff. Uh-huh. The crops are just curling up, and all the Shanghai people who love an underdog story are just like, need Chinese players. Yes,
they're dying for it. Yes.
The dramatic reenactment was worth extra points, but I got to take points away for mentioning Dufresne. Nuki, what are your thoughts here? Should we be giving these players a second chance?
I think so. I'm a big fan of giving second chances in general, and as Mitch said, well, it's about exactly. and I don't think boosting in particular is like an offense that should exclude you from the highest competition possible. I think it's not a good thing. Just to be clear, it's not a good thing. You shouldn't do it. You shouldn't buy boosting or whatever. But I think it's not as big of a deal as, for example, being racist on social media or being like hurting someone, etc., etc. It's more
fixing.
Or match fixing.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah. I think definitely they should get a second chance, and I think it would definitely benefit the level of competition in the Overwatch League if we are not too harsh on people.
For sure. Chan Man, thoughts here?
Yeah, pretty much agree with that. I mean, can we just give him like 100 hours of like community coaching or something?
Oh, and yeah.
Just like, for, you know, the boost.
Yeah. Community work.
He can wash my windows if he wants. That's
he can drive the mayhem to the bus. Exactly. He can drive the mayhem
the
bus.
Buses for a little bit, right? No, that's my agree job. With that. I mean, I think the boosting, yes, it's a bad, generally a bad thing, but it's not bad enough that he should be excluded from, you know, the league. I'm basically a league that he belongs in, you know, in terms of this skill and whatnot. So yeah, you know, we have to be careful, you know, with these kind of things. I think OWL is obviously, or the Overwatch League, just, you know, commission and everything, they're just trying to be careful about, you know, what to obviously put the hammer down on and what not to, more so not, you know, like being too lenient on anything. But this is a case where, yeah, I think everybody would be fine with him going in. Now, you know, the whole PR, you know, that he's going to get crap for this for a while.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, so it's one thing if he's willing to put up with all that, because that will come up for sure. No matter how much darlings, you know, the Shanghai Dragons have been recently, you know, this will keep coming up until he just, like, you know, becomes just a crazy star, or his play will speak for itself. But if he's down for that, then, you know, we should include him in it.
Yeah, for sure. A Smith, last word on these types of players and Lit Young specifically.
Look, I've got to definitely agree. You've got to give these guys second chances. It's just not fair to them. You know, you're punishing them. Part of the reason they do this is so they can afford their, you know, afford being able to just play games. Mm-hmm. They're doing this for money because they want to be able to play games competitively or play, you know, however they want. You know, I get it. It is a problem and it's not a good thing, but the Korean and the Chinese culture need to calm down about this stuff. I know it's a cultural problem, but you're hurting your entire fan base. You're limiting so many top level Koreans, so many top level Chinese players due to this. You're going to really hurt the scene and cripple your teams, and cripple your deal because of your culture. Also, I mean, they suspended Sato for 30 games. That's 3/4 of the season. That's way too long. I mean, it's not fair for them, making them sit out for that long due to something they've done in the past. Now, if he did it after, while he's doing this, then yeah, I can understand, you know, this is in the rule book. You can't do this. You know, we made this part of the rules, but you're punishing somebody for something they did in the past. that's tough. It's not like he's aimbotting or doing other things, you know, or throwing in games and stuff. You know, it's not as big of a deal as the culture is trying to make it. And I'm sorry, but you got to calm down. You're hurting your scene. It's your problem that the reason Shanghai Dragons aren't as good right now. Part of it is your fault because you've done this.
Yeah, it's definitely a topic that is torn in a lot of ways. So we'll definitely see how that turns out. But that is the end of round two. We're going to be moving into the buy or sell round. But a quick recap of the points. The gap has closed. It is much closer. It's still anyone's game here. We've got Nuki 37 points, A-Smith with 38 points, and Chanman and Uber at the top of the scoreboard with 41. Some theatrics definitely played into that for sure. But let's move into round three.
The payload is approaching its destination.
This, of course, is the buy or sell round. I'm going to try to phrase the question in a way that makes sense to say buy if you agree, sell if you disagree. But if it doesn't, just run with it because I'm bad at this. So we'll start. Nuki, so we saw Profit. Obviously, this was kind of a flash in the pan topic, but we'll talk about it quickly here. Profit flipped the bird to the camera in Overwatch League. He got fined $1,000, and then everyone kind of washed their hands of it, got a little bit of a chuckle out of it. But $1,000 is $1,000. So Nuki, buy or sell? Does the punishment fit the crime here for the Profit case?
I'm definitely buying the punishment. I don't know if I said that correctly, but.
No matter what, it's wrong because I word the questions wrong, so it's okay.
I agree with the thousand.
Okay, that was correct.
I think in comparison to other punishments we saw, it's definitely something that it can justify. It shouldn't be tolerated, and it should get a fine. Or it should be fined.
Mm-hmm.
And I think $1,000 is, in comparison to overall salary, a good amount. Mm-hmm. to have a baseline with.
Yeah, for sure. It was the, I think, equivalent of a slap on the wrist. Chanman, what are your thoughts here? Is it a slap on the wrist, or is $1,000 a big amount for something that was kind of innocuous?
I mean, I think I buy just generally. I buy on the punishment. I definitely think that $1,000, just relative to what we saw, obviously with XQC, it was a correct punishment. I just want to, you know, I just hope that, you know, whatever's thrown, you know, given to him, that the biggest part of the whole Profit thing for me was just that it was really the fact that he just thought it was funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That was the part that kind of got me a little bit in terms of, you know, like the players really understanding that this is a professional league, you know, mm-hmm. and we would never have seen that happen at Apex. Like, that would never have happened at Apex. Mm-hmm. So why does it happen at Overwatch League? So that part of me really irked me about it. But in mm-hmm. terms of the punishment, I agree with it. I mean, I think $1,000 is, I think more than that would have been, you know, I think if he did $2,000, I think I would still be okay with it. But anything above $2,000 or even any kind of like suspending games would have been too much.
Yeah. A-Smith, thoughts on this one? Buy or sell?
I'm going to sell it. I think it was too light. It seems okay. Inconsistent with what they did. They punished XQC. They suspended him for 4 games is what the league officially suspended him for, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then Dallas, obviously, on top of that. So, but we're just going off what the league did. They suspended him for 4 games. I think that's inconsistent with, you know, then they give Profit a slap on the wrist. You can't judge intentions. Obviously, he didn't do this intentionally, but he did it. We're not judging intentions here. You're judging the action itself. And the problem is the action actually affected more people than it affected when XQC did his deal. XQC did his on his own stream, which only had, you know, 10,000 viewers, whatever. Okay. Profit did his on the Overwatch League stream, which at the time had close to 100,000 viewers. You're doing that a lot more viewers. Obviously, he didn't do it intentionally. So I'm not saying, you know, oh my gosh, let's go overboard. I think, you know, you suspend him for a game, whatever. You have to set a precedence and a consistency, and that's the problem. They're not being consistent with their punishments. You suspend Sato for 30 games. Then you suspend XQC for 4, and now you give Profit a slap on the wrist. You know, I don't think they're being consistent with their punishments. You need to be consistent with it. Sorry, you know, I don't think the money should go up. I think that's the money's fine. I think a suspension was in order, or don't suspend XQC, or, you know, you've got to do something that's consistent, and that's what they're not doing.
Interesting.
So,
interesting.
So question about the suspensions. If they get suspended, do they lose pay for, like, are they paid based on the number of games they play or are available to play?
I don't know. Have no idea. Okay. I don't know if that's public either. So I have no idea, but, Uber, you're suspended for dropping some F-bombs on this show, at least. no, not really. Your suspension's over. But what are your thoughts here? Buy or sell the profit deal here?
Okay. All right. I'm going to sell this. I actually think it's excessive. And I use this. We can use precedent to make the comparison here as well. Pi did this as well from League of Legends Team Cloud 9. It was less than half of this, okay? And I think that's far more reasonable. There's a few reasons for this. Obviously, he didn't intend to do it, right? Like, obviously, and people think he thought it was funny and he laughed it off and stuff like that. This happens kind of all the time, and I think there should be a fine. I think it's excessive when... Okay, so if you think that this is okay when Shanghai Dragons coach U4 gets only fined, like, maybe slightly more than double for account sharing and boosting, then you get one of these.
Way too much. All I'm going to say is that Uber, you now owe me $1,000. Unfortunately for me, I had to pay you $1,000 for that fish's butthole comment. So we're even now. But let's move on. A-Smith, we'll start with you. I mean, obviously, I've been preaching this for the longest time that NYXL is the best team in the league, but they beat Seoul, which a lot of people have considered the best team in the league for a long time. So buy or sell, NYXL is the best team in the league right now.
All right, I'm not going to pander to you at all, but I am buying it, okay? just let's make this clear. I'm not pandering. I'm buying it. I think they've looked consistently better than any other team in the league right now. Over the course of the season, yes, they dropped a game to Philly, but it was a really close game. And the team that everybody's comparing them to right now is Seoul, and they beat them. You know, it is what it is. Right now, it looks like New York has a better DPS core, and their DPS core is better than Seoul's right now. Yes, Seoul has Fleta, and Fleta is amazing. But then they have Munchkin, who's really not even in the top five, top six, seven tracers in the league right now. I mean, you know, you've got Sabiolbi and you've got Libero and Pine. That's a really, really strong DPS core anyway. You mix it. Jonak is crazy good. So is Jaehong, but I think Jonak right now has been even better. Mm-hmm. Overall, I like New York better, and I think they're gelling as a team. Seoul has looked questionable during games, and I don't know if they're 100% set on what they're doing as a team right now. Mm-hmm. It looks like New York has consistency. They know what they're doing. Their players are subbing out at this time. They're doing this map, and they look more consistent. You've got to make them the number one overall team right now.
While I wholeheartedly agree with everything you said, there is no better way to make me think that you're pandering than to tell me that you're not. So you're losing a couple points for that. But
get out of here.
That's the beauty of having the control panel in front of you. Uber, what are your thoughts? Buy or sell NYXL, best team in the league right now?
I buy it. Not obviously just purely on the basis of the transitive property, but I think that, like, yeah, Jonak is... very good. He also gets set up to, like, do a lot of this as well. Like, Jonak gets a lot of space, yeah, like, to play, and he gets a lot of damage boost. But I actually think Mekko is strides ahead of Zulfa as a flex tank player. His diva is insane. One of my favorite moments, I was watching NYXL versus Valiant on Junkertown, its second stage, and Mekko is just literally going in one at a time and just belting every support player on the Valiant, one after another. And the entire Valiant, like, hanging off him like it's Godzilla, like, destroying your city, and you're hanging off this guy, and he's just walking through, killing all those supports. So he's looking really good. They didn't even have to use Pine, and they made such a clever decision, such a mature choice to rest Pine, because they knew that they couldn't just lean into the big boss to beat them on those control maps. Mm-hmm. And they managed to, you know, use Libero's flexibility and his strength to actually beat a team who was obviously going to be leaning heavily into Fleta. So I was really impressed by that. I hoped they weren't going to play Pine there because it's a bit gimmicky at that point, mm-hmm. and Seoul were going to be ready for it. And Oasis kind of sucks for McCree mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. So I had to applaud them. And despite that slip with the Fusion, and no, they didn't lose because like they weren't preparing for the Fusion. Fusion just played sick. Yeah. But I'd say right now, tentatively, but sure enough, it is NYXL at the top.
Yeah, it's hard to bet against Shadowburn and Carpe on any given day. But Nuki, what are your thoughts here? Buy or sell NYXL, best team in the league right now?
I'm definitely joining the other two and buying it because most of the things that they said before too, I think the preparation and the support mm-hmm. staff core of NYXL also plays a really big mm-hmm. role in their success. Mm-hmm. Having the insight of when to switch players in and out and what strategies and preparation is run against those teams that they are facing, even though they drop maps from time to time, mm-hmm. is still a very big factor in their success.
For sure. But Chan Man, last word here, buy or sell NYXL, best team in the league.
Right this moment, I would say yes. I think that once we get to the end of the season, it might change. It might be 1A and 1B type of thing. Mm-hmm. But right now, New York, they just understand their roster mm-hmm. the best right now. You know, those eight guys, they know how to rotate them in for whichever map. It has to do with the prep, like Nuki was saying too. But they just, you know, have a very definitive plan, and they just stick with it. Like, no matter what people say, you know, the Pine, the whole thing about Pine. Everybody wants to see Pine because, like, Pine literally doesn't lose games. But you know, they know that it's just not right to play him mm-hmm. on some of these maps, you know, and they have a talented enough roster that they don't have to. And then if you look at Seoul, you know, on kind of a counterpoint, I think they're still trying to figure out like some things. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have more mm-hmm. players too that to deal with. They have 11 guys. And I think they're still trying to figure out how to rotate these guys, like who should be playing. And there's still some experimentation that's going on. So by the end of the season, I think we'll see a much more, you know, a definitive Seoul team, you know, just at mm-hmm. least rotation. But right now, yeah, I think New York's got it. And we can even see just the results leading up to just, again, before Philly, New York was stomping everybody. I mean, mm-hmm. it wasn't even close, 4-0-ing everybody. So I expected that to happen too, you know, with the Philly game. So that mm-hmm. was definitely a setback. But then, you know, it returned, mm-hmm. you know, and they beat Seoul. So, they're the best team right now.
I agree. But you didn't say bye, so I got to take a point away.
Oh, bye.
Oh, God, sorry, man. It's the Blevins giveth and the Blevins taketh away. but let's move on real quickly here. Obviously, one of the most hyped teams coming into the Overwatch League was the Dallas Fuel. I don't think anyone realistically put them in their power rankings lower than number four. I think almost everyone had them in their top four, top five at the absolute lowest. And now they're really kind of at the bottom of the league. They've got one single win to their name. So the question here is, Chanman, buy or sell? Kaikai is on the hot seat right now with his job on the line and with the lack of performance from the Dallas Fuel.
Is there something between buy and sell? I mean, right now I would say buy that it's like warm. I wouldn't say mm-hmm. it's hot by okay. any means. I think any team firing a coach in this first season, I mean, they'd have to do a terrible job, in my opinion, to mm-hmm. have that happen. Well, again, yeah. I mean, it's possible, but I just think that, you know, it's a combination, you know, how teams perform, what players are there. It's a combination between coach and GM, right? So it's like mm-hmm. trying to pick who's at fault here, you know, can be a tough thing. With Kaikai, you know, I think he's had to deal with a lot of things that were, you know, he couldn't anticipate. Some things you could anticipate, you know, and you know, things like XQC and things like that. But, you know, I don't think you know, Kyle would see Taimu really struggling from a confidence mm-hmm. issue and things like that. I mean, Taimu was one of the rocks, you know, for this team, even for though sure. we all kind of know he, you know, it goes up and down a little bit, but mm-hmm. still, you know, he was like a foundation of this team. So when you lose one of those things, I mean, all of a sudden, you know, you have to kind of go back to square one as a coach. So he's getting a lot of grief for that, and I don't think it's completely deserving, you know, just mm-hmm. being in the position that he's in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a slightly warm just because, you know, you're on a high profile. I mean, you have to perform, you know, when it comes down to it, especially when you're on a team like Dallas, you have to perform. Everybody's watching you, and the fans, you know, they expect a lot. So, you know, I think Kyle's doing fine, to be honest. Like, I think he could do be, he could be doing better, but definitely not doing like a terrible job. So, you know, hopefully he'll be able to get, you know, rally these players together, maybe pick up a couple guys and, you know, have some more tools to work with. But overall, I would say, what is it? So it's
a soft buy.
Sell? Or do you buy? I'd say more sell than buy. Okay. Actually,
a soft sell. I got you. It doesn't matter which one you pick. You just got to make sure you pick one of them.
Yeah.
A Smith, obviously this one's near and dear to your heart, being the resident Fuel fan here. What are your thoughts? Buy or sell Kai Kai in the hot seat right now?
I'm gonna sell it strictly because it's just way too early to be firing a coach or putting them in the hot seat. You know, this is a long season. You've got to see how he tools it. Some of these things were probably out of his control, but at the end, you know, the coach is the final say. The buck stops with the coach, and he's got to take some blame here.
The buck stops with Astro, not the coach.
Yeah, it's more the owner in this case.
Okay, whatever. You know what? Look, in most sports, I don't know exactly how everything works with esports, but in every sport, if your team is not succeeding, your coach gets fired. That's usually how it works. And so, you know, his team's not succeeding right now. He shouldn't get fired just yet. I mean, you know, give him a full season or at least till, you know, the end of stage three or something to see what happens. I think Kai Kai needs some help there. I think he would, you know, he would be good to have an assistant coach or another analyst or somebody. I know Tasmo's over there, and but I know he's the manager or whatever. And then you have Violet, I believe. But you know, I don't think he has the same kind of support staff that other teams around the league do. I would like to see him get another person in there to help him. But it does seem like he's maybe not managing the team the best way possible. A lot of people say that he is like a player's coach, and he has lets the players have all these opinions. And I'm sorry, but when you're coaching, you know, I coach high school volleyball right now, and I don't let my players have opinions. When I tell them to do something, they do it. Sure, I you know, hey, what are you more comfortable on? Okay, cool. You know, I want to know where they're comfortable, but at the same time, when I'm calling the plays, I'm calling the plays, and that's what it is. What it is.
Yeah, definitely an interesting dynamic to see how just the coaching role in general. I mean, it's not necessarily new to esports, but it is somewhat new to organized Overwatch, at least somewhat. But Uber, curious to get your thoughts here. Is buy or sell? Kai Kai is in the hot seat right now.
No, I mean, I sell that. I think it's easy to think that because of sort of the crap he's getting from a lot of his fans. But like, it's incredible, isn't it? Like, you have to have no education whatsoever, but just an opinion on Reddit, and your post appears right below the person who has an education in the topic. So that's the problem, is that everyone gets a voice and opinion on Reddit. That's some nonsense, by the way. I mean, we need to dispense with that really quickly. So the point is, again, like, Kai Kai has to deal with an incredibly interesting scenario on his team. I think he has one of the hardest jobs of coaches in the Overwatch League because he's dealing with some real strong personalities. Now, I mean, you know, this is kind of cheating, but I spend a lot of time in the Dallas Fuel scrim room and I sit with them and I listen, and, you know, I listen to the conversations and the scrim discussions, and you've got guys that never talk at all. Chips and Coco. Well, Coco talks, but Chips said nothing. So you got XQC who's talks all the time, but only when, you know, he really wants to talk. And then a guy like Custer who's just going to talk all the time anyway, right? You know, Seagull who knows so much but doesn't talk unless it's maybe drawn out of him a bit more. Yeah, it is an insanely weird environment sometimes in that room. And Mickey's just going to he's just going to be hanging from the chandelier, you know, the yelling things at you. So you have, like, it's so hard to manage this. And then you have a week where your player is sick. One of them is refusing to play. One of them is freaking banned or suspended. So you have now no options on the bench at all. And then you've got Hastro sitting up on the penthouse floor in Dallas, like, with his big Cuban. Oh, we need a French player. We need another one of those. Yeah. Who's that AKM guy? Get him in. Here's the thing, right? Like, Hastro has a lot of say in his team, and he's very passionate about esports. He's very involved. He wants him to bring in all these players. But Kaka's like, we don't need any more. We don't need, like, you know, like, before, on the last day of the signing window, before the Overwatch League started, Hastro wanted Dallas to pick up AKM. And they couldn't, because there's no time to process the paperwork for any of that. Hastro's like, make it happen, Kyle, do it, my minion. Because, like, that's not possible.
Well, Dylan had, like, very little time anyways. Yeah.
So, okay, so team's not performing well, but, again, you've got these players who individually are down on themselves. And you've got, like, Violet, they've got more coaching staff than a fair few teams actually do have to work with, to be honest. Like, having three on board, Tasmo is, like, the mum. Kaikai's there, is doing the coaching and has to be the bad cop sometimes, which I think he does really well. I'm really impressed with him. I didn't really know much about him as a player before coming in. I think he does a really good job. And Violet is there to work with the players on a one-to-one level. I would say you don't sell him. Maybe HODL, but I don't think that he's on the chopping.
But Violet's not an Overwatch player. I mean, he's a StarCraft player.
He's not there for game-specific stuff at all. He's there as a performance coach. He's actually has qualifications in the area. He's there more for like the mental performance and stuff like that.
Uber, I got to give you bonus points for the cryptocurrency reference there. So.
Millennials, easiest audience. Let's go.
Oh man! Oh guy, you got me. I have too much of my life riding in cryptocurrency right now to not just arbitrarily try to inflate the market by giving him points. But Nuki. I knew this was going to happen. Last word here. Is Kaikai in some trouble? Buy or sell?
Definitely sell. Like, I don't think that Kaikai is either the main problem, nor should he be printed as the main problem. Mm-hmm. I personally think he's doing his best with the situation he has, which is a very fucked up situation. But definitely not in trouble, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Mom cuss, yeah. Guys. Mom cuss.
Mom cuss more often than you know.
but definitely an interesting situation. My personal opinion is that it's definitely too early. But I want to move into this last question, this last topic here, and I left it as a secret on purpose, and we're going to start with Uber here. So last week on the cast, we saw the introduction of something very, very interesting. And Uber, you were in fact wearing it. It was this Hyperdrive shirt that we saw. So Uber, even though you literally did buy it, do you buy or sell the Hyperdrive shirt?
This is coming back.
Oh man.
Okay, so there's a story behind this, right, if you want to hear it.
Oh, I certainly do.
So basically, everything you see all of us wear is not our clothing, right? So we have a wardrobe department, right, and we have people that supply the clothing. And so, like, they go out and get it, and they try and find something that's our style. Apparently, I'm, like, a button-up guy now. I used to be, like, the cocktail blazer in, like, Pocket right. Square guy, but they changed that now. They don't like us wearing too much stuff. So Matt gets to be the guy that wears the cool jackets or whatever. Okay, cool. So I have a selection of shirts. I go down, I'm sort of told what I wear. I have some leeway. I can sort of ask, you know, or make requests. I'm not going to lie. I like the bra. Saw it on the rack. And I'm like, yo, this is kind of cool. It's kind of retro. Like, maybe if I can get the sleeves rolled up or something with this one, like, I might be able to make it work. But the stylist was like, no, sleeves down. I'm like, okay. All right. So I buy it because I look good in anything, boys.
I agree with that. B, I do agree. It did look retro because it was from a long, long time ago in a galaxy. Okay.
That's what we call retro.
Got him. I wish I could give myself points, but I can't. I don't even know. Should we? Does anyone have anything to say? I know. We do. Some people have stuff to say about this. This is more of a meme question. But Nuki, any thoughts on this? On this shirt? Did you get a chance to see Uber with
the thing
shirt?
Is, I didn't see the shirt. The shirt was this weekend, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's right. You were.
I was working DreamHack this weekend, so I didn't have any chance to catch Owl yet, and I've been catching up the whole day today.
When you see it, you're gonna have to tweet out, and we'll retweet it.
It's an absolute buy when you can make a meme out of it.
I mean, for the meme's sake, it's probably a buy. But I personally have to say, the stuff that Mitch gets to wear is not really the thing I would like him to wear.
Oh, dang.
Because
of
Jamie.
Now Mitch said it's out of his control.
It's out of his control. I don't think he's a button-up guy. I think he's a one or two button-open guy. So
Or three.
There you go.
Four all the way down.
This should be the sexy guy is what you're saying, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
they got mad as a sexy guy, but
the stylist does a good job with the other people. I think she does a really good job with Zoe. I think
phenomenal with Zoe.
Phenomenal with Zoe. But Mitch needs some love, please.
My style was like, screw you guys, I'm the peacock. I'm gonna walk around ridiculous outfits. Like similar, I guess, in CS was the same thing, right? Mm-hmm, and I did it initially just to piss production off. I got like bright pink shirt on, like big old fucking square out. Like,
Miami Vice,
I look like foliage coming out of my breast pocket.
Smith, any thoughts here on the
look,
shirt?
I'm gonna sell this shirt hotter than I would say. I couldn't sell it on a garage sale. I don't know. Come on, look here. Okay, we were in group chat Discord. I was like Discord with all the guys, and everyone was like, "What the crap is he wearing? It's so distracting. Like, how do you even like?" They couldn't get past the shirt. I'm just saying, like, it was hard to hear what he was saying because the shirt was so loud.
Okay, I had to throw that one in there, and I couldn't have been happier. I couldn't have been happier.
Tell Blizzard to sell the shirt.
They'll buy it, man. I can pay for profits. It's fine. I bet.
Definitely a crazy one there. But we are at the end of the rounds here, and we had a very, very close match. But we are going to be moving on to the final question. We had Nuki in fourth place with 53 points. We had A Smith with a very close 54 points. Chanman with an even closer 55 points. And Uber, just you bought too many points with that cryptocurrency reference. Yeah, with 63. So Chanman and Uber are going into the final here. It's going to be a win me over question. So there's no points given out. You're each going to give your answer, and then I will pick the winner by hand. So the final question is simply, who is the best Widowmaker in Overwatch League? And a coin has been flipped. Fake coin has been fake flipped. And Chanman, you are going first. You are on the clock.
No.
Oh God! He's throwing already.
Best Widow in Overwatch. Okay. So there are a lot of obvious choices here. You know, obviously we've seen Linkster go off like crazy. Pine, of course, Flood at times too. But I'm going to go with a crazy, crazy pick here. And looking into the future, I think our boy Teemo is going to right the ship and become like one of the best Widowmakers again in Overwatch League.
Interesting.
So I'm picking time. I've been seeing him training, drilling. I'm seeing some progress. It's going to take time, but I know he's not used to drilling. So the fact that I'm seeing him, the coaching staff obviously getting him to drill, I think it's going to be phenomenal for him, especially, you know, somebody that does have issues at times, you know, just ups and downs. Having something that can seem rote at times, you know, just this kind of drilling practice is really, really great. You know, to actually have that to go back to, it could even be a daily thing where you just do it for about 15, 20 minutes. And, you know, Taimu still has it. Like, I actually believe in him, and I still believe that he still has it, and he can still become, you know, the best Widow in Overwatch League.
True. They don't call him Mr. Good Aim for nothing. Uber, who is the best Widowmaker in Overwatch League?
I thought Chairman was going to try and win, but I guess not. So.
Damn.
No, look, honestly, like, fair point. Really is fair point. Timo's a great player. I actually think Linkster is the best Widowmaker inside the Overwatch League right now. And I love it because he was the best Widowmaker at the very start of the game. If you think back to the first takeover, he was out there on the middle of Nepal just doing, you know, 720s and just snapping heads. He was an incredibly good player. But then everyone forgot about him because he descended into what I like to call Bromas Prison on Dignitas, right?
Seriously, this man
completely muted his ability to be able to play the style he wanted to. So now he's back. His mechanics are insane. He has an experience going quite a long way back in previous FPSs, even to like Return of Castle Wolfenstein, by the way, when he was a young kid playing. So He like in a 1v1 against any other Widowmaker, I give him the heads up on Fletter. Unfortunately, it's going to come down to how good his team is at making space for him. But if the question is who's the best Widow in the Overwatch League, Lynx is far cleaner and far more consistent even than Fletter, who we saw struggle on multiple occasions even against New York in that battle. He was pressured. We saw Fletter struggles without space as well. So Lynx up.
Oh, man. I mean, the correct answer was obviously Pine. You could have gotten an easy win there. But, man, I really like the pick here with Taimu, but I gotta go with Lynxer here. I've been documented having said that Lynxer's the best Widow in the world for years now, back in the Creation Esports days, and even the what was it, Flat Earth, I think was the original team from like 10,000 years ago. I was saying it back then. So
it's like Evoke G and Vainless on that team. Yeah. So sick, man. Yeah.
Way back in the day. Yeah. So Uber, I gotta give it to you. I gotta give it to you on that one. So the victory here,
captured the objective,
is yours. Well, the floor is yours. Sell out. Do whatever you want. You've got the floor is yours. The victory is yours. Revel in it.
Yeah, I'm soaking it in right now. I just need a couple moments to contain myself. Can I just say, like, the stuff that this, the fact that this kind of stuff exists and we can get on and talk about Overwatch League like this, and there's so many other great podcasts out there, like obviously Chan Man out there with the overview. Now, I'm going to use my space to actually pump you guys up because I love so much coming on here and joining you guys for shows like this. The fact that they exist about something that I'm also so passionate about, you guys are, I think people like you that put on shows like this are far more important to the league and the ecosystem than you can even imagine. So I'm just going to say, go watch the Overwatch League, but big shout out to you guys and all the work you do. You're all ace.
Really appreciate that. No, heart is warmed. Shucks. Heart is warmed. But that is going to be it, guys. I don't even know. That was probably the craziest episode. I think that's probably the word I would use here thus far. But thank you, everyone, for watching. You can check everything that we do out at highnoonpodcast.com. Make sure to check out everyone and thank all of the hosts. Tweet at them. Say how much you love them and all of that good stuff. But that is going to be it, guys. Thanks, everyone, for watching. And we'll see you guys next week around the payload. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Peace.
Bye.
Bye. See you.